Welcome to episode 77 of the Fredcast for the week of July 31st, 2007. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. On this week's episode of the Fredcast, Good Samaritan Cyclists, Tour de France review, Slipstream confirms top level cyclist, a couple of recalls, a dangerous Powerade ad, and a man fined for ringing his bicycle bell. Then I've got a couple of announcements for you. Fredcast mentioned on several other media sites, an audio ride report, and an upcoming ride. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. The Fredcast is sponsored by Cambria Bicycle Outfitters. Go to www.thefredcast.com. Click on the link on the left-hand side of the page for special deals just for Fredcast listeners. And of course, I'd like to thank Cambria Bicycle Outfitters for renewing their sponsorship of the show. We appreciate it, and your support of them helps them support us. Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, they outfit the world. Well, welcome back to the Fredcast, the normal Fredcast. This is not a daily tour podcast, but I have to say your response to the daily tour podcast, my daily summary of the goings-on at the Tour de France, was phenomenal. You really enjoyed that. And stay subscribed to the daily tour podcast feed, because as future races come up, things like the Tour of California, we'll be putting those into the daily tour podcast instead of into the normal Fredcast feed. So if you didn't subscribe to the Daily Tour podcast and you just listened to it here on the Fredcast feed, go over to iTunes or whatever your podcatcher is and subscribe to the Daily Tour. You never know when some great race is going to come up and the spirit's going to move me to do more daily podcasting. I enjoyed it. It was phenomenal. It was fun. It was tiring. But all in all, your response was just fantastic. So I'm glad that you enjoyed that. Nevertheless, it's time for a regular Fredcast. Now, before we get started with the regular Fredcast, I want to make sure that you heard something that I inserted into a revised Fredcast number 76. For those of you who downloaded Fredcast 76 early, you heard a story that I did at the very end of the news that, well, just a few hours later, I regretted having doing. You know, I did that Fredcast right after I did a daily tour podcast. It was right in the middle of the night. It was very, very early in the morning. And you know what? Sometimes people make mistakes, and that one was mine. So if you did hear that story, it was about David Miller and Robert Miller. If you heard that and you didn't hear the apology, well, then now's the time for me to retract the story, let you know that everyone's entitled to make a mistake. That was one of mine. I apologize. I regret having done it, but water is under the bridge. It was done. I won't do it again. I value your opinion of the Fredcast, and your opinion of me, and I promised in the revised version of that show that I would not let you down in the future, and I am a man of my word. Now, having done that, it is time to get to the news for this week. Now, normally when we do the news here on the Fredcast, one of the first things that I do is I talk about the Pro Tour, and I talk about how things are going in the racing season so far. But you know what? We've had a lot of that, and I'll get to that second, but first I thought I would talk about some really good news and the way that cyclists can help other people. Two great examples. First of all, I think by now you've all heard about the tragedy that occurred in Minneapolis, Minnesota, just over 24 hours ago now. What happened was a major bridge over the Mississippi River that is part of Highway 35W collapsed unexpectedly, killed several people, and injured scores of others. And there are still people missing, even at this hour. One of the listeners sent me some photographs that appeared on the internet showing a cyclist who was in the area, who put his bike down and went out and went to help people who were stranded in this awful, horrific situation. And I put copies of those photos on the Fredcast. Go to www.thefredcast.com. And whoever that cyclist is, he has the thanks, I'm sure, not only of the people he rescued, but of most Minnesotans and Americans and just people around the world. So to you, mystery cyclist, you have a lot of people who are in your debt and a lot of people who are admiring the work that you did, the selfless work that you did to help others. Thank you very much. And next, a world away, down in Canberra in Australia, there's a 70-year-old man who literally owes his life to a passing cyclist. Mr. Joe Massingham, who's 70 years old, collapsed on the street due to a heart attack recently. And it was the passing cyclist, or at least we have to assume he was a cyclist because he was dressed in, quote, cycling attire and wearing a helmet, unquote, who performed CPR until the ambulance arrived. According to Mr. Massingham, who did survive, quote, I am very grateful for their help and would like to thank them from the bottom of my heart. In particular, I would like to meet the person who performed CPR prior to the ambulance arrival because his actions potentially saved my life. So once again, to you, Mr. Mystery Cyclist down in Australia, a thank you to you for doing what you could to help someone out in need. Great job. Okay, well, now it is indeed time for that racing news that I promised you just a moment ago. It's time for the Pro Tour review. And of course, there's only one race to talk about, and that is the race that just completed the three-week Tour de France. Now, when the race first began, we all had extremely high hopes and a lot of optimism that this was going to be the year of good news from the Tour de France. And indeed, it started off that way. When it started off in London, the crowds were huge. The weather was gorgeous and the racing was fantastic. And at this point, it just seemed it was going to be a great Tour de France. That this was the foreshadowing we were looking for, that everything was going to be great. But as you well know, especially if you listened to the Daily Tour podcast, things did eventually, and quite unfortunately, fall apart. A couple of examples. There was Patrick Sinkiewicz, the rider who was dismissed from the tour by his team because of a positive doping test. Then there was Christian Morini, who was not only dismissed by his team, but his entire team dropped out of the tour because he tested positive during the Tour de France for the use of testosterone. And he was actually taken away in handcuffs by the French gendarmes because doping is a crime in France. And that was just his A sample. He declined the B sample, all but admitting that he had indeed taken testosterone to try to get a performance advantage. And then there was the leader of the race, Michael Rasmussen from Team Rabobank, who was wearing the yellow jersey and who had every chance in the world of going into Paris wearing the yellow jersey and winning the 2007 Tour de France. He was accused first of having failed to file certain paperwork with the UCI, letting them know his whereabouts so that he wouldn't miss a doping test. And originally, the story said that there were just two warnings. And the Tour de France organizers didn't know about these warnings, which predated the Tour de France. They were a little bit upset about it. And at first, they supported Michael Rasmussen. And then, when they found out that it was actually four warnings that he had received, and when his team found out some evidence that indicated that not only had he lied, or pardon me, that he had not said where he was, but that he had actually lied, so the indication said, when he said that he was in Mexico visiting his wife's family, the evidence that they had pointed to him being in Italy, possibly having a meeting with a doctor there who might assist him with performance-enhancing drugs. As a result of that, he was sacked by his team and therefore was out of the Tour de France, and he no longer had that yellow jersey. Quite an embarrassment for the Tour de France, quite an embarrassment for Rabobank, and if the allegations are untrue, if he was indeed in Mexico, quite an unfortunate circumstance for Michael Rasmussen as well. Parenthetically, after the tour, a hacker or supposed hacker in Denmark was arrested for supposedly hacking into Rasmussen's emails and trying to sell them to a local newspaper. So this became quite a circus. But wait, the circus continued because there was Alexander Vinokourov, probably at the top of everyone's pre-race predictions for the guy who had the best chance of winning the Tour de France. Well, Alexander Vinokourov was involved in a very bad crash in the first week of the tour that left him with literally dozens of stitches in both knees and in one of his elbows. And at that point, it seemed like his chances of winning the Tour de France were all but over. Then, just a few days later, he blew past everyone in the individual time trial to win the stage, and it seemed like Vinokourov was on a comeback. He then won a stage just a couple of days later, and then the following day, it was announced that Vinokourov had tested positive for homologous blood doping. We've talked about this before. We talked about it specifically in the case of Tyler Hamilton. Homologous blood doping is simply putting blood back into your body that has more red blood cells to try to help you perform better. When Vino tested positive, his entire Astana team pulled out of the Tour de France. Then after the Tour de France, Iban Mayo was reported to have also tested positive, this time for EPO. And it just seems ridiculous that these guys, knowing how strict the drug controls are, knowing that they're going to get tested if they win a stage, knowing that there's the chance that they could be random drug tested at any times, it seems inconceivable that these guys would continue to try to use performance-enhancing drugs. Now, the positive side of all of this, because of course, you know, the media has taken the negative side and said that all cyclists are dopers and that cycling is akin to professional wrestling. But the positive side of all of this is this. We're catching these guys. And I've gotten email after email after email from listeners who have said exactly that. We're catching the dopers. The drug controls do seem to be working. If these tests turn out to be true, then we've caught the cheaters. And if there are more out there, they're on notice that they will be caught too. And that seems to me to be a positive result from all of this negative news. Now, nevertheless, it was a very exciting 3 weeks, and it was a great race. At the end, of course, Alberto Contador from Team Discovery did win the final yellow jersey and is the 2007 Tour de France champion. Are there doping allegations dogging Contador? Yes, there are. Nothing has been proven. At this point, they are just allegations. He has no positive doping tests. So until somebody can come up with some evidence, he is the Tour de France champion in one of the tightest general classifications ever. He had Cadel Evans right on his heels, and then just a few seconds behind Cadel Evans was the American Levi Leipheimer, also from Team Discovery. It was a great race. There were a lot of young racers who performed extremely well. Contador himself, just 24 years old, won the best young rider jersey for his team. Behind him, another rider who performed just an amazing race, Juan Mauricio Soler Hernandez. He's from Colombia and Team Barlow World, a team that was a wild card entry into this year's Tour de France. He not only took second in the best young rider competition, but he won the overall King of the Mountains polka dot jersey. Second place to him was Alberto Contador. So you can see the young guys did very well this year. And hopefully these young guys have the ethics and have the mindset that they can do this without doping. Just to round things out, in the green jersey was Tom Bonin from Belgium and Quickstep. And in the best overall team, of course, it went to Team Discovery Channel because they had just a fantastic Tour de France this year. It was a great race. Now, speaking of the race, of course, one thing that I wanted to comment on, and this is commentary for me, and that is the television coverage. Of course, you know, here in the United States, we're watching the coverage on Versus, and we're watching the commentary by Phil Liggett and Paul Sherwin. My friend Carlton Reed from Bike Biz magazine told me that that's the exact same commentary that they're seeing in Britain as well as down under. So if you've ever wondered why Phil and Paul seem to spend a lot of time not only talking about American cyclists, but also talking about cyclists from the UK as well as from down under, it's because, of course, they're talking to local audiences. My only negative comment about this year's tour coverage is that it was quite obvious that there were certain companies who were sponsoring Versus's coverage. I mean, there were a lot of specialized ads, which, by the way, I enjoyed, and ads from other companies as well. And advertisements are fine, but the one thing I didn't appreciate were the advertorials. When they would get one of their correspondents in the middle of the coverage to start talking about some supposed quote-unquote new technology, and all it really was new technology from one of their advertisers, from Cervelo or from Specialized. And it's fine if they want to do that as long as they label it what it is, paid advertising. That's my only gripe. And if that's my only gripe, that's not bad. Enjoyed the 3 weeks of coverage. I watched it wall to wall. It was the way that I was able to live Twitter the Tour de France. And I think that Versus deserves a pat on the back for bringing live professional cycling to TV in the United States. Kudos to them for doing that. So it was a good Tour de France. It was good racing. There were the bad parts. There were the controversies. And let's go back a few months, because you remember a few months ago, there was a big dispute between the UCI and ASO. ASO, the organizers of the Tour de France and several other very high-profile cycling races throughout the year on the Pro Tour circuit. Well, they laid down their arms, they came to a truce, and the UCI Pro Tour did become part of this year's Tour de France. But I think that that truce was temporary, because now the battles have begun again. When the Tour de France ended, ASO accused the UCI of not doing everything possible to end doping in professional cycling and accused the UCI of trying to undermine the Tour de France. In a return salvo, the UCI recently issued a press release. Listen to this language. Quote, the UCI strongly condemns the attitude of Mr. Clerc and Mr. Prudhomme, they of ASO. Apparently for them, the anti-doping campaign is a good thing if it protects the image of their race, but is considered harassment if the results harm them. In a serious battle against doping, it is vital to accept the collateral effects. It seems that ASO's objective is for a profitable tour rather than a clean tour. So this battle is raging again. ASO all but promising that in 2008, the UCI and the Pro Tour will have nothing to do with the Tour de France. It's proving that it's going to be yet another interesting few months as this battle rages even farther. I will keep you posted on this one, because it has all the earmarks of a very interesting and exciting argument. You know, my only problem with it is that I really hope that it doesn't deter from professional cycling. Do you remember back in the Tour of California when the teams said, listen, you can't have a horse race without horses. We have the horses. And you guys can fight all you want, but it's up to us to decide where and when those horses run. So the most important thing is that this battle gets settled, and it could get settled positively for professional cycling if it means that all these doping scandals go away. But on the other hand, if the battle gets worse, it could mean tragedy for the teams and for the riders. Let's hope that doesn't happen. And in yet another press release from the UCI, remember that pledge that they made the Tour de France riders sign that said that they would make their DNA available to Spanish authorities if necessary, and that if they tested positive in a competition, that not only would they accept the usual penalty of a 2-year suspension, but that they would also agree to pay 1 to 2 years' salary as a fine to the UCI. Well, that pledge is now being extended to continental European teams. So not just Pro Tour teams, but those who race on the continental circuit. Another interesting thing that came out of this whole pledge issue was that it looks like Alexander Vinokourov, who did test positive for blood doping during the tour, may be the only one of the riders who tested positive during the tour not to have signed the pledge. That's curious to me because it was my understanding that if you didn't sign the pledge, that you couldn't play. I'm interested to see that clarified in the days and weeks to come. Okay, enough about the Tour de France. Let's look quickly at the Pro Tour standings after the Tour de France. Sitting in first place is Danilo De Luca from Italy with 207 points. In second place, coming off of his win in the Tour de France, Alberto Contador from Spain with 191 points. And in third, following his second place podium finish in Paris at the Tour de France, Cadel Evans from Australia with 174 points. For the teams, in first place, it's Team CSC with 264 points. In second, the Discovery Channel Pro Cycling Team with 226 points. And hot on their heels in third, Team Liquigas, 222 points. And for countries, in first place, it's Italy with 613 points. In second, Spain with 570. And by the way, the Spanish riders had an awesome Tour de France. And in third, it's Australia with 412 points. Now, the next Pro Tour events coming up is the San Sebastian Classic on August the 4th, and then the Tour of Germany on August 10th through the 18th. Well, with all this doping news coming out of the Tour de France, you may recall that a few weeks ago, I interviewed the person who's in charge of a group called the Agency for Cycling Ethics. And we talked at length about a U.S. continental team called Team Slipstream, sponsored by or powered by Chipotle. And that team, led by Jonathan Vaughters, has now confirmed that they have signed three new people for their 2008 teams. And listen to the people who they've signed. David Miller from Great Britain, Christian Van de Velde from the United States, and Dave Zabriskie from the United States. Seems to me that Team Slipstream is looking to make a point, and that the riders who are joining Team Slipstream are also looking to make a point. We ride clean, we test often, and we are going to put some of the top cyclists in the world on our team to prove that they are riding clean. Now, they are not currently a European Pro Tour team, but the word is that they're going to be moving the team to Spain and that they're going to be making a bid for a Pro Tour license for 2008. All I have to say is, who is going to join this team next? Because they are going to be a powerhouse in 2008. Now, speaking of teams and teams that have exploded onto the world scene, let's talk a little bit about Team Barloworld, because unfortunately they had a tragedy this week. Now, Team Barloworld, as I mentioned earlier, they're a South African team, and they were admitted into this year's Tour de France as a wild card team. Nobody expected them to do quite as well as they did. They did extremely well, with guys like Robbie Hunter being one of the best sprinters in this year's Tour de France, and Juan Mauricio Soler from Colombia winning the polka dot jersey as the King of the Mountains. Well, unfortunately, one of their cyclists, South African Ryan Cox, who is a member of the team but was not a member of the Tour de France team, he's 28 years old. He passed away this week. He had had a vascular lesion operation 3 weeks ago in France. And according to Clint Curtis, who coached Cox when he was a junior, the reason for the surgery was because, quote, it was found that the artery had, as a consequence of all the cycling, become knotted, as sometimes happens to a garden hose. It often happens to cyclists because they spend so many hours on the bicycles with their legs bent while pedaling. Unfortunately, the main artery in his left leg burst this week, and Ryan Cox, at 28 years old, has died. Our condolences go out to Team Barloworld, as well as to Ryan Cox's friends and family. Okay, a couple of recalls to tell you about this week. The first involves some Thule bike racks, specifically the Hitching Post Pro, Expressway, and Trailblazer models that were sold between January 2003 and June 2007. Thule has determined that there's a pinch point between the bike arm bracket and the upright assembly of the hitch-style bicycle rack, and when the bike arm bracket is moved to its down position, the pinch point has the potential to cause injury, including lacerations and or even amputations. Consumers are told to immediately stop using the racks and contact Thule at 800-THULE-91 or 800-848-5391. And you can reach Thule between the hours of 9 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and they will send you a free repair kit. And the second recall to tell you about today is for Innovations Second Wind Bike Tire Inflators. These are a combination tire inflator and hand pump, and unfortunately, these could shatter under pressure when you're inflating your tires if there's a blockage in the tire valve, apparently posing the risk of bruises, lacerations, and ringing in the ears. Now, the recall involves the Genuine Innovations Second Wind MTB model with part numbers 2525, 2525-0, or 3519, as well as the Wrench Force two-shot model with part numbers 84995 and 80383. Now, these consist of a hand pump as well as a CO2 cartridge inflator. You should stop using these immediately, as is typical with these recalls, and contact Genuine Innovations at 800-340-1050 between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. Mountain Time, Monday through Thursday, or visit their website. And I've put links for both of these recalls into the show notes. So go to www.thefredcast.com and click on the show notes link at the top of the page and check out the show notes for show number 77. Now, while we're talking about safety, I want to talk about something that appeared on the bikebiz.com website. I think you all know that Carlton Reed is a friend of mine, somebody who appears on the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast, and BikeBiz is a magazine that he writes for, and he writes for their website. And he recently wrote about a controversy going on in Great Britain, specifically about an advertisement for the sports drink Powerade, which is distributed by Coca-Cola. Now, in this ad, there's a man training for a triathlon. The ad shows him riding his bike on the road, and it looked from the ad and from the lighting in the ad that it could be early morning or perhaps late in the afternoon around dusk. Some of the vehicles that were shown in the ad had their headlights on. As a result, there is an agency in the UK called the Advertising Standards Authority. They are the independent body set up by the ad industry to police the rules that are laid down in the advertising codes in Great Britain. So essentially, they have the ability to censor advertisements there in the UK. A certain person complained that the ad could be seen to endorse or condone the act of riding on the road in low light conditions without reflective gear and without lights. And as a result, they decided to pull the ad off the air in the UK, despite assurances from the advertising agency that created the ad, a company called McCann Erickson, that it was filmed during the afternoon in late March, and that because of the style in which they filmed it, so-called fly-on-the-wall style, because of that style, they didn't use traditional lighting equipment, and that made it appear as if it may have been darker than it actually was. An organization called the Broadcast Advertising Clearance Center said that they felt that it was okay, that it didn't suggest anything dangerous. Nevertheless, the ASA upheld the complaint, saying, quote, "We considered that viewers would not be aware of the lighting aspect and were likely to believe that the ad was filmed in the early morning or at dusk. We considered that because it appeared to be dark in some scenes and because, in many scenes, the traffic around the cyclist had their headlights on, the ad could give the impression that reflective clothing or lights were not required when cycling in conditions of poor visibility. We were concerned that the ad could be seen to condone hazardous cycling and therefore concluded that it breached the code. And as a result, that Powerade ad will not appear on the telly in the UK." And finally, you can file this next story under stupid laws and stupid cyclists. A man in Belmar, New Jersey was recently fined, get this, $572 for the ringing of his bicycle bell. Now, a little bit of background. This happened on July 22nd outside, you guessed it, a local bar. This occurred at 1:45 in the morning. 1:45 in the morning, local bar. Okay, let's move on. The individual involved kept ringing his bicycle bell, and he was asked twice by police to stop ringing the bell on his bicycle because apparently there in Belmar, New Jersey, they have ordinances that are called quality of life ordinances that deal specifically with late night noise, which has been a very frequent complaint of year-round residences in this community. So here's this guy standing outside a bar at 1:45 in the morning. He's asked twice by police to stop ringing the bell. So what happens? An attractive woman comes up and she asks if she could ring the bell. She did, and he was promptly issued tickets for a noise violation as well as disorderly conduct. He was fined $572 by Municipal Court Judge Dennis Lavender, who apparently, according to the news story, was pretty amused by the whole issue of what exactly happened. At the end of the case, the judge agreed that this was a first in his courtroom and then offered just a little bit of advice to this cyclist and to every other cyclist outside a bar in the middle of the night. He said, quote, "Don't ring that bell to get girls." And I think that's going to do it for the news for this episode of the Fredcast. Hey, before we get into the features for tonight, just a couple of announcements that I wanted to bring to your attention. The first is, thanks to you listeners, we have indeed been nominated for a podcast award for the second year in a row. Thank you so much for nominating, but your work isn't done. This is where I really need you to get out there and vote. Go to www.podcastawards.com and vote right now. Stop the recording. Don't do anything else. Go vote. Vote early. Vote often. Vote for the Fredcast. We're in the sports category. We've got some tough competition. Okay, nothing like the sex show that we were up against last year, but we've got some tough competition in the sports category. It would be great to win. It would be a testament to you, the listeners. So please go to www.podcastawards.com between now and August 15th and vote every day. Thank you so much. Announcement number two, let's talk about the Fredcast forums. A lot of you really enjoy using the Fredcast forums, but it appears that spammers enjoy using the Fredcast forums a little bit more than you do. In the last 2 weeks, I have gotten over 1,000 requests by spammers, spam bots, I should say, automated programs that go out, find forums like ours, try to sign up for a membership, and then bombard the board with ads for Viagra and various other things that you don't want to see there. What does this mean? Well, it means that right now the Fredcast forums are sort of in a state of sort of semi-working. For those of you that are already signed up, you should be able to use it, but in a limited fashion. I'm going out of the country for about a week. When I get back, I will get the forums back in shape, and I will let you know as soon as that happens. Announcement number three. A lot of you have ordered Fredcast socks. Thank you so much, and I hope that you're enjoying them. I know I'm enjoying mine. The problem is we are nearly sold out. I literally have maybe about a half a dozen pairs left. So order your Fredcast socks if you are one of the first to get in your order for those six pairs. If not, we are going to order new Fredcast socks with an entirely new design in the next few weeks, and I will let you know when that happens. And of course, I'll put pictures of the new socks up on the website as soon as they're ordered. So get your orders in for the ones that we've got and get ready for the new version of the Fredcast socks coming soon. And finally, announcement number four, and this one has to do with Fredcast tours. As you know, we've been planning a tour to the French Alps and some of the most famous climbs of the Tour de France for early September. I have gotten emails after emails and inquiries after inquiries. I can't even count them for the numbers of you that were interested in doing this trip. The problem was, and you all said this, I didn't give you enough time to plan. I only gave you about 2 months. And what with the value of the dollar versus the European currencies, it has just been nearly impossible for you to be able to find flights that were reasonable. And because I only gave you about 2 months to plan, a lot of you had already planned your summer vacations with your families and you weren't able to take another week off. So here's what we're going to do as a result. We are going to postpone the Fredcast Famous Climbs of the Tour de France until 2008. We're going to be announcing in the next couple of weeks the date of that postponed trip, as well as the dates of other Fredcast tours in 2008. I'm going to give you as much advance warning as possible so you can put it on your calendar, both with your family as well as at your work, and also so that you'll be able to find good airfares so that the trip will not become astronomically expensive. We've got great rates on our travel packages, but of course you need to get yourselves there as well, and you want to be able to do that reasonably. So for those of you that wanted to do the Fredcast Famous Climbs of the Tour de France, and those of you who have already signed up, we'll be letting you know very, very shortly what our policy is going to be and when we're going to be postponing it. Thank you all for your interest, but keep that interest up. We're going to be doing tours again in 2008, but I've got one question for you before we move on, and that's this. I'd like to know from you where in the United States you'd like to do a Fredcast tour. One of the places that I've suggested is the islands of Hawaii. Now that there's a great ferry service in Hawaii, that means that we don't have to pack our bikes up every day after a ride to put them on an airplane to take them to the next island. We can actually island hop, and we can do a few days on the Big Island, a day or two on Maui, go to Oahu, etc. I want to know if you want to do Hawaii or if there's another destination in the United States that you'd like to go to with Fredcast Tours. Go ahead and send me an email to thefredcast@gmail.com. I'm very curious to hear where in the United States you'd like to go. I have a feeling I have some idea of where you'd like to go in Europe, but where in the United States would you like to go on a Fredcast Tour? Okay, well, that's going to do it for the announcements. Let's get into just a couple of short features because the show is starting to go just a little bit long for tonight. First of all, I wanted to mention to you the fact that this podcast, the Fredcast, as well as its sister podcast, the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast, have been mentioned in a couple of great places recently, and I want to thank them for doing that. First of all, theroadbike.com, and you should go check that out at www.theroadbike.com. They happened to do a story recently. They had gotten a lot of people who have said to them, hey, I get my bike magazines, but that's just not enough of a fix when it comes to getting cycling information. Where else can I get great cycling information? And the answer was podcasts. The first podcast mentioned was the Fredcast, and we appreciate that very much. They said some very nice things about us. They also mentioned the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast. So that was really great. And if you're looking for some other cycling podcasts to listen to, in addition to the Fredcast, not instead of, go check out their article at theroadbike.com. I also want to thank Bicycle Retailer for mentioning the Fredcast and the fact that we were doing our daily tour podcast as well as the live microblogging of the Tour de France. That was great. And Bike Biz magazine also mentioned those factors as well in their magazine. And of course, we appreciate them and of course our friend Carlton Reed for making that happen. Now, next up, I have a great audio ride report from one of our most devoted listeners. This is from listener Curtis, and he gave a ride report of the 9,000 person Seattle to Portland 200 mile ride. Go ahead and take a listen as Curtis takes us through his experience doing this very famous, excellent bike ride. Curtis?
Hello, my name's Curtis Corlew, and I'm a Fred too. On Saturday, July 14th, my wife and I joined 8,998 of our closest friends at the University of Washington in Seattle to start a 200-mile, two-day bike ride. It was the 28th annual Seattle to Portland ride that's organized by the Cascade Bicycle Club. We joined other riders from 44 states, England, and even Siberia for this event. And although I said it was a two-day ride, it turns out that 2,230 of the riders decided to do it in one day. Riding in a group of 9,000 really gives you a look at some cycling diversity. We saw every age, height, weight, and fitness level of rider imaginable. We saw bikes that were just scary unobtainium light racing machines. We saw bikes that were just regular scary, as in, lube my chain, what does that mean? Among all the more traditional bikes, there were numerous recumbents of all sorts of different styles, some with windshields and full fabric enclosures. And the cutest little three-wheeled recumbent with a child bike on the back that the kid was pedaling. There were also numerous tandem bicycles, and I don't know what you'd call it, a tandem for three. We even saw a unicyclist on a big wheel unicycle. When we passed him, I was amazed he was able to balance, and then I realized he was messing with his jacket. There was one rider that did the entire ride on a skateboard. We did see a few bikes that made us wonder what their riders were thinking, or even if they were thinking. But we were well prepared because we'd been listening to the Fredcast long before we started. We even replayed Fredcast episodes 05 and 07 on our drive to Seattle, and we recommend them highly. Thanks, David. We followed a lot of your advice, and it really helped. As you've probably heard, the weather in the Pacific Northwest is highly variable. It was 104 2 days before the ride, and it was raining the Tuesday afterwards, but the Cascade Bicycle Club apparently ordered up a perfect weekend for us with temperatures in the upper 70s, and under the scattered clouds we could see Mount Rainier as we rode through Washington. It was really beautiful. The midway point for the two-day riders in Chehalis offered numerous sleeping accommodations. It's a huge fundraiser for the area. Local churches rent out sleeping space, and numerous sports teams open up their homes to riders. The community really makes the cyclists feel welcome. We had wonderful hosts, and people were just happy to see us everywhere we went. One of the highlights was crossing the Lewis and Clark Bridge into Oregon. State troopers queued up riders, then they closed the bridge to traffic, and a couple of hundred riders owned the bridge as they passed over. They did it for the sake of safety, but the result was a great view and just a wonderful sight of a mass of riders going across a beautiful bridge. One of the other highlights was coming into Portland and crossing the finish line. They made us feel like we'd just finished the Tour de France. There were literally hundreds of people cheering as we rode in. It was almost embarrassing, and yet it was really wonderful. This was our first century. And on the second day, it was our second century. The ride had only one minor climb. I'd recommend this ride for anyone wanting to try a two-day long ride, and it seems like it would be ideal for people that wanted to knock off 200 miles in one day for the first time. The Cascade Bicycle Club provided extensive documentation online, including a ride guide and a training guide, and we were really well prepared for it because of the Fredcast and the information we got through the club. We had a great time, so I guess I could say that we did indeed enjoy the ride.
Thanks, Curtis. That was an awesome ride report. It really felt like we were there with you, and I really want to thank you for sending that in and to mention to the rest of you listeners that as you go out and do these rides, I would love to hear your reports, and I know that other Fredcast listeners would as well, because if we can't do one of these rides with you, hearing what they're like makes us want to go do one of these rides the following year. So Curtis, thank you for sending along the ride report. And to the rest of you listeners, I challenge you that as the summer continues, when you go out and do a ride, send the report in here to the Fredcast. It would be my pleasure to play your report here on the show for the other listeners. Now coming up next, now that we've had a ride review, it's time for a ride preview. This one for the Bike Against Odds, September 16th, 2007. And here is the preview.
Here's a cycling event you won't want to miss. the 5th annual Bike Against the Odds Tour de East Bay, with 4 challenging routes ranging from 30 miles to a full century with 10,000 feet of climbing. It's a fundraising bike ride for the Breast Cancer Fund, whose mission is to identify and eliminate the environmental causes of the disease. Their pledge-taking website makes the fundraising as simple as sending out an email to your friends and family. The event takes place on Sunday, September 16th in Oakland, California. Several of the well-stocked rest stops have panoramic views of the San Francisco Bay, and a delicious organic lunch, entertainment, raffle prizes, and a health expo await you at the finish line. To sign up or to sponsor a cyclist or a team, please go to www.breastcancerfund.org/BAO. Inspire the people in your life to question the chemicals they use in and on their bodies. Together, prevention is possible.
And I rode my yellow bike on that beach road. Never thought about where I might go.
That sounds like another great ride and another great cause. Go ahead and check it out. I've put links in the show notes, so you can also participate in the bike ride against odds. Well, that's going to do it for tonight's edition of the Fredcast, episode 77, sponsored by Cambria Bicycle Outfitters. Just a couple of notes on how you can reach me if you'd like to. Of course, you can follow my Twitter feed. There's a lot of you doing that. That's at twitter.com/Fredcast. You can also send me an email, my email address, thefredcast@gmail.com. And of course, you can send audio comments in your email, just like Curtis did and just like Mike Pompa did with that ride preview for Bike Against Odds. And you can send those into my email at thefredcast@gmail.com. You can also use the Fredcast listener hotline, and that's area code 206-203-FRED. And besides using Twitter to know what's going on the Fredcast, go ahead and visit our website. That's www.thefredcast.com. And now, like we do every show, it's time for PodSafe Cycling Music. Tonight's music comes to us, as usual, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Tonight's song is called Me Being Me, and it's by Tim Blaine. Full links in the show notes to his website, his pod show site, and also where you can find the song and all of Tim Blaine's songs on iTunes. So until the next episode of the Fredcast, which should be coming up much sooner than the last episode was, I want to wish that you enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
Not that far along, so we put on a face to get the point across, we're stable. 'Cause at the start of something, there's different ways to keep the quirks hidden under the table. So if I ever get strange by love, start to mess it up, please stick around. That's just me being me. And if I ever get strange by love, way past the point you're thinking of, please stick around, that's just me being me. I guess I know the fallout that could take place if it gets a little real too quickly. So now I'd like to point out what's at stake, if you're thinking that you already get me. So if I ever get strange, my love, start to mess it up, please stick around, that's just me being me. And if I ever get strange, my love, way past the point you're thinking of, please stick around, that's just me being me. Yeah, that's just me being me. Say the word and I'll let you look at my cards and see what you're dealt. I know you.
good, but I'm thinking you might not be able to live with yourself. So if I ever get strange, my love, start to mess it up, please stick around. That's just me being me. And if I ever get strange, my love, way past the point you're thinking of, please stick around. That's just me being me. Yeah, that's just me being me. If I ever get strange, my love, way past the point you're thinking of, please stick around. That's just me being me. And if I ever get strange, my love, start to mess it up, please stick around. That's just me being me. If I get strange, my love, way past the point you're thinking of, please stick around. That's just me being me. If I get strange, my love, way past the point you're thinking of, please stick around. That's just me being me.